Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
It's spring and the lockdown is easing and we've come to Sheffield, so my heart has leapt because I'm back in my old city, the city where I was born and brought up. And we've come to the suburb of Crooks, up one of the seven hills of Sheffield, and we're in a street of terraced houses, and we're here to meet one of the most impassioned and original musicians I've heard for many a long year. Sometimes you hear an album and it just leaps out of the speakers and hits you between the ears. And that's what happened to me with In the Furrows of Commonplace by Jim Geddy, a young lad from Sheffield who is imbued with landscape, imbued with a sense of place and a sense of the people and the community where he was born and grew up. And he's going to tell us about that on our walk today.
I'm Matthew.
Back in the motherland.
Yeah, exactly.
How are we doing?
Nice to see you. Oh, I love coming back here.
I know. To be honest with you, I had that same feeling because I've not been back to this part for absolutely ages, and I just got that kind of
Yes. I've been pointing out everything to them.
Yeah. When you've left for a bit, you kind of
Oh, look, there's the children's hospital.
Yeah.
Jim, where are we?
We're outside my nan's old house, which I was born and lived my early childhood in. It's an old terrace house in Crooks, Newlhouse Road. Bit of a famous road, that's Tasker Road. Another famous musician was born on that.
What famous musician?
One of the Cockers, what's his name? Joe Cocker.
Joe
Cocker, yeah. He was born, right. And he actually knew my nan and granddad. They used to see him causing trouble and stuff. He was a bit of a hellraiser by the sounds of it.
So was there any music in the house here?
Oh, there was loads of music. I remember as a kid, just mad scenes going on because my granddad's parents were born in Ireland in Roscommon, and he spent most of his childhood in Ireland in a tiny little place called Clún na Holly, which is right in the sticks. And so they were part of this Irish Catholic community that in Sheffield at the time was huge. There was a lot of Irish community centres and pubs that were owned by Irish people that came over, such as the Flynns and Fagans, particularly like Joey Fagan was, he used to be around here all the time. He knew my granddad very well. They kind of knew each other from school. So there was always people in, and it was just such a strange atmosphere when I was growing up in the kitchen, because you just all these mad people, like nuns sat drinking tea with your nan, and the old boys, you know, singing songs in the lounge, drinking and thinking they're like Luke Kelly or something, you know. And it was just all these mad characters and music all the time. And the door...
And it was all Irish music, was it?
Predominantly, yeah. Like, the Dubliners was just a constant. The Dubliners was just an absolute constant. But then there was also this kind of weird mix of country and kind of rock coming through at that point, you know. It's always been imprinted in my memory, the back door always being open, because it's like a courtyard at the back. And so you share your courtyard with your neighbours, and it was always just open, people coming around for cups of tea and stuff. Very fond memories, you know.
Were your mum and dad not around?
So I just grew up with my mum, so I was just a single mum. So, like, me and my mum lived there for the first good chunk of my early childhood. We just spent it in my nan and granddad's, and we were kind of in and out of there. As my mum moved around for work and jobs and stuff, we'd somehow come always back to there, and so it was kind of a home for us.
And did you start singing or playing from an early age?
I mean, to be quite honest, I dismissed that whole thing. I went through the rebellious kind of kid thing where you're just like, it's just what your mum and your grandparents listen to, so I'm not into that. Like, I'm not going to listen to that. And then it's kind of gone full circle. Because I dropped my shopping off my nan and granddad now on Thursdays, and the other day he was telling me about a story he had in one of the boozers in the Grapes in Sheffield years ago when the Dubliners played. Him and a couple of the lads was like drinking late, and I was just like gripped, and I was like, wow, this is the best thing I've ever heard, like, tell me more, you know. Ronnie Drew, him and Ronnie Drew apparently had like an all-nighter, and said, and my granddad was like, oh, wow, he was a lovely guy, you know, it's not what you think he's going to be, he was, you know. And it's like suddenly, like, it's gone full circle. I just want more of those stories, and I want, you know, more of those songs, and it definitely is now a part of something that I'm very attracted to. But, you know, early on I was not interested at all.
So what kind of music did you get into first?
I mean, such a wide, huge range of stuff. I was really into the rock kind of punk stuff as early teenage years, really into bands which had kind of a bit more heaviness to them. But then I was really, throughout my teenage years, really into hip-hop, like rap, which you wouldn't think if you listen to any of my records. But I think growing up in a single parent household, and some of the narratives and some of the poetry and some of the social narratives that a lot of hip-hop that I was really attracted to at that age had a huge impact on me. It suddenly just like opened up a lot of things in terms of what you can do with music and what you can put across with music. And it still is, you know.
That, storytelling.
Yeah, storytelling. And a lot of these things, they're really mixed into each other, you know. Like a good traditional folk is the same spark for me as well. That storytelling, that human experience, you know.
What's the plan for this walk?
Yeah.
Where are we going to go?
Well, I was thinking, if we just basically walk on this road, we'll see the park at the top.
That would be fantastic.
And then we could make our way to the Moss Valley. I drove through it. It was such a nice scene. It's bank holiday and all. Everyone's out.
So what does Sheffield mean to you? It's a city with a great history.
Yeah.
And a city with a great musical history too.
Yeah. It's home, you know. I think with the background that I've got, I think it's been a bedrock really for developing, you know, as a person, as a musician, as someone who feels like the communities that I've come from have been very supportive. Like my family's history here as well, and kind of working class background and creative communities which are also embedded in that and have come from that. It's home, and it's a bugger to kind of get away from as well. I tried my best when I was in my early 20s to try to get away, but somehow it always kind of pulls you back.
Where did you go?
I went to Belgium, of all places, for quite a while. Lived in Europe. I had some friends living out there, and they just kind of invited me to come over and do a bit of travelling. So I ended up going over and staying in a couple of kind of squat situations where I was sleeping on friends' floors and touring a bit and travelling, just using that time just to try to do that, because you kind of knew I wasn't going to be able to do it again. Lived in Manchester for a while, because everyone goes to Manchester because it's supposed to be better and bigger. And
but you found out it wasn't.
It wasn't, no. Yeah. It's not as half as good as Sheffield in my opinion.
We're going past the Crook Social Club now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Behind this hedge.
Yeah. My nan and granddad still well, before COVID, used to religiously go every Friday and Saturday night.
What sort of entertainment would you have there?
It's pretty old school kind of entertainment, really. There's a couple of snooker tables and pool tables and
bingo.
Bingo, big bingo night. I think that's Saturday night, bingo night.
Am I right in thinking that Def Leppard once played there?
Yeah,
did they?
Yeah.
I think early days.
I think it was like early days. Yeah, they got about quite a lot. You know, they got, like, especially on the local scene, I think when they were starting out, they played everywhere, you know, from kind of old punk band boozers, pubs and rock clubs, which was huge in Sheffield at the time. Like, 70s, the 70s kind of scene for that music was...
I can remember it.
Yeah, I know, yeah, well, you probably remember it better than me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that place is, it's a bit of social history there, you know. That's as important to me as any other part of history in Sheffield, you know. I mean, my granddad's generation, you know, and my mum's generation, that has been a kind of community hub and supported so many people over the years. The kind of development that's been going off in Sheffield, just to see these kind of spots still hanging on, it just makes them even more important, you know, amongst the developments, amongst the kind of character of old buildings and old bits of history kind of getting torn down.
And now we're at Stannington View Road because there's a great view, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a great view here. Yeah,
let's just go to the end here. Oh, look at this. This is what happens in this city all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You come round a corner and you can see for miles and you can see the city spread out below you, but you can see green space as well.
Yeah. Yeah, this kind of epitomises Sheffield as well. My granddad always used to say, like, there's always a view around the corner, you know. No matter what street you're on, if you just go around the corner, there's always a view, you know. And I think that really sums it up.
Oh, this is a hell of a view, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, where are we looking at now? Where can we see?
So we're looking on Stannington over there. There's a council estate. This kind of mix, I love this kind of mix. It's very much embedded in my own music, is this kind of connection to people and nature. Because then to the left of it, you've got the opening of the Peak District and Riverland Valley at the bottom of it. A huge nature reserve where the old industries used to be, which is now just full of wildlife and nature and stuff. And if you keep going out, you're right into the heart of the Peak District, and Bradfield's over the hill over there on the other side.
So, Jim, who have you brought to meet us now?
He's picked up a couple of scallywags who were lurking on the back streets. Sheffield is DBH, who's an amazing fiddle player, guitarist. He's basically just an underlining genius of all things. And then we've got double bass extraordinaire Neil Heppelston.
Have you got the double bass in that car?
Yeah, Neil? It all crams in there.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not a very big car.
I used to be able to get it in the Ford KA as well, with amps and
it's not
and
a folding double bass.
No,
is it?
No, full size thing. Yeah, it's quite
brilliant.
Amazing.
You brought the bass with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you brought some instruments as well?
Got the fiddle, yeah, with the string section. Basically. Yeah.
Do you think we could do a song here outside?
Love to. Yeah.
Would you mind?
Just a note. I reckon that would be nice to do. It's a song, Just a Note, which is it's a traditional song which I got from a recording of Lyle Waterson. Loads of other people have done it, but just that version really, like, wow, just blew me away. Huge fan of Lyle, you know, like, she's just amazing. So, yeah, we'll give it a go.
Just a note for time is shorty, and the way can long the day. But I'm thinking of you, maybe. Though you're many's the mile away, kiss the children for me, maybe. Do not let them pine or grieve. Tell them that I'm working for them, though a home I had to leave, building dams and fields and factories. shifting mountains by the road, I'll be with you in September when I'm finished with the road. Just a note for time is short. To work alone a day, but I'm thinking of you, baby. Though you're many as the mile away.
Beautiful, thank you very much. You've got an audience now, they're clapping you. And this access to green space from working areas, working class areas, is very typical of the area, isn't it? And it's more and more important. I suppose in lockdown it's been really important.
Yeah, extremely, yeah. I think with this time, I think people's connections, and especially, I think it's not really talked about a lot, it's nature and countryside is, I think in my lifetime, I've kind of associated with kind of privilege, you know, those who have it, they've, you know, they've earned a lot of money, either they've bought land or they've been fortunate enough to be living in the center of countryside. And I think especially growing up, I never thought nature and the natural side of land has been accessible for someone who might be from a working class or built up community. And I think during this time, I think Sheffield's a great example where those things can sit next to each other, you know, they're not excluded, they're there for these communities, and they're extremely important for people's well-being.
I always think of the film Kez
when I'm
here, because you know, there's that, you know, he's living in the working estate, but then he finds a space where he can fly a kestrel, can fly a kestrel.
That was like a big film in the house a lot. I remember seeing that as a kid and just, you know, mind being blown, and also just the ridiculousness of that PE teacher. And I just remember having
Brian Glover.
I remember having teachers like that. I mean, it just, everything about it, just, it just really, it was like home, you know. It's so much I could connect with, that sense of growing up and things being a bit hard, being a bit penned in, and also having these eccentric characters who are telling you what to do and how to do it, and you know it's all, you know, it's all bullshit, you know it's all a game, and you know these people know it is a game. And just, I love that film. And just, yeah, like you said, making a space for yourself. I think that's what that film does, that story does so well, you know. Connecting to something deeper, you know, connecting to nature, connecting to something on your doorstep and finding that space and owning it.
And just seeing the backs of the terraced houses here with the washing hanging out.
Yeah.
But they're right next to this sloping green space which goes down. But yet you can see the serried ranks of the housing estates down below as well. It's the those contrasts that make it so special.
Yeah, and just people around as well. You know, I've been hearing these arguments and sentiments of people being annoyed with people being out and about. And again, I'm not very comfortable with it, because, again, it comes from an exclusion. It comes from, like, people's ideals of what the countryside is. And it is for people, you know, and people should be in it, because if they're not, then it's not going to be there. If it's not used, if these people aren't connected to it, then it will go, you know.
I just want to set the scene here a bit, Jim, because we've come out of the city now.
Yeah.
Where are we exactly?
So we're just on the borders of northeast Derbyshire, just at the front of the Moss Valley. So we're a bridle way away from getting into the Moss Valley, which is a valley that covers areas of Sheffield, but also villages like this and towns on the northeast Derbyshire border.
It's a lovely little village here with a farm shop. And a honey shop. Yeah. I noticed down there, which is open,
yeah.
And a pub, which is closed at the moment. And the exciting thing is that the instruments have come out. Now you've got the guitar, and Neil's carrying the double bass up the hill here. He doesn't look. He looks happy, actually. He looks quite cheerful.
He's only started, so he might change his mood.
We're going quickly down a very narrow bridle way.
Yeah,
you all right to get the bass down there?
Yeah. I reckon so, yeah.
It wasn't traditionally built for double bass carrying, funnily enough.
All right, let's get down this bridle way, and then we can stop and have some music. Well, on this podcast, I've carried a harp.
Wow.
On the Isle of Skye.
Yeah.
Down the Fairy Pools, which is down a really steep incline. And that, well, I'm a huge harp, but nonetheless very heavy.
It's still harp.
Yeah, exactly. So now we've got a double bass, which we've taken over as style, which is
easy.
Impressive.
Even broke a sweat.
And what a great spot this is, because we're now once again opening up into the view, looking down into the valley over the sloping green grass and the trees in the foreground. And you can't even see, well, you can just see the city kind of edging its way over the hill over there. There's an estate of houses and there's a couple of blocks of flats on the horizon. But the rest of the landscape is just fields and trees. And yet you're so close, aren't you, here?
Yeah, you can see a couple of council estates just in the back where Sheffield just opens up, and then part of Norton, the kind of wood seats area of Sheffield, where it, just in the distance, you know, it's just creeping around the corner.
Do you come out here a lot?
All the time, yeah. Since I've come back home in December, I've just been walking most days. Just this is one of the spots that I kind of park up on there and just, you know, just have a little wander around. And it's just amazing, the amount of public footpaths and stuff that you can get on is just, it's such a luxury, you know, to have this.
Great smell as well of manure.
Yeah, good smell.
Yeah, that clears your sinuses, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah. Good smell of shit is always.
You know, you're in the countryside, as my mother
yeah,
used to say.
Yeah,
it's a country smell.
That's a buzzard, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just hanging in the air there.
Yeah. Get a lot of buzzards around here. There's a local guy who used to call it Buzzard's Garden, because they just somehow came here in the 70s and they just hatched loads, you know. And just there's another one just in the distance as well.
Stone and ground in poverty, they've put this land for me. We are torn by scavengers, impoverished by eternities. Our mothers owe him mouths to feed, sunken fathers in drunken dreams. As I awoke on the morning sun, on he that I was spawn upon, bastard child with hopeless gun, as the snow rides on. Poverty, they've your kingdom and your commonplace. As swallowed men with bitter taste, as we watch the thickets in the gloom, where we wielded years and toiled through, and the fallen helms and furnace wars, as the snow weighs
Thank you. Tell us a bit about that song, Jim. What's all that about?
It's called Stolen Ground, and it's a kind of mixture of watching someone have a mental breakdown, someone who was close to me at the time, and they got sectioned. They had a mental breakdown for various reasons, but it was also kind of mixed in with external factors of society, with some problems that individual was going through, in my opinion, around austerity measures and the impact of environmental issues and things that were around that person. And I didn't really realise what the song was about until when we rehearsed it yesterday. It was really funny. It's a song that I've kind of, I wrote from observations, I suppose, politically and socially. But then when we played it yesterday, after, you know, so many, like 2 years maybe of after writing it, it actually hit me what it was actually about, and it was directly influenced by someone close to me at the time who had a mental breakdown. And
so you weren't conscious of that?
No.
When you were writing it?
No.
What did you consciously think you were doing?
I don't know, really. It just happened. It just kind of just happened. Sometimes songs work like that, I find. They just kind of happen, and then you don't really figure what they're about until sometime down the line. And it happened yesterday. It was only after I got home and I was kind of thinking, and I was, wow, yeah, that's about that.
So, Jim, we sort of left off talking earlier about your musical journey before you got into folk music. So tell us how you got into folk music again for the second time round.
I'd love to be able to tell you a really cool story, but it's really not. It's a really cliché. Into Led Zeppelin when I was like 16, looked into what their influences was. I was a massive fan on the third album that they did, because there was a lot of acoustic tracks on it. Then started to find Pentangle and various other kind of folk revival stuff. And then that was it. I was in, you know, I was into the kind of networks of traditional folk and started to plough my way through different parts of it. And then before that, I was always drawn to acoustic music. I had a load of CDs always being sent to me from my auntie, who, she always used to send me these like secondhand Oxfam CDs, and there was always these blues albums and Howlin' Wolf and John Lee Hooker and a huge traditional folk repertoire that she used to send me. And I didn't really know who these people were at the time, but then my ear was more tuned into kind of the more acoustic stuff, and I just found it more comfortable for me. And then I think as soon as I saw that it was actually cool through the eyes of like a band like Led Zeppelin when I was like 15, I think that was it. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into this, you know. And Bert Jansch was a really important figure and a musician for me at that time. I was playing fingerstyle naturally. I never played with a pick, so when I learnt guitar, it was with my fingers, and started to learn about open tunings and Bert Jansch, and that was kind of a really pivotal moment in terms of me playing the guitar in that way.
And were you trying to imitate him at first and then trying to develop your own style after that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was like, just ripped him off. You know, like David Graham and that whole revival kind of thing. I just loved it, and as close to it as I could get at that point when I was like 15, 16, was like, yeah, I was just trying to rip it off, really, you know. But then, you know, as that went on, you kind of start to push that out and try to find something yourself. And I hope, I'm constantly trying to strive for just doing something that's original. I'm trying to find my own take on it, even though there's influences like that throughout the years. They're not as important necessarily now as they were, if you know what I mean.
Well, no, because it's very much your own sound now, and part of that for me is not just the instrumentation but also your voice.
Yeah.
And how did you develop your singing style? Because it's very unique.
Probably, yeah, when I was getting really into traditional singers, the Watersons, Mike Waterson maybe even more specifically, was a huge influence. My ear was really attracted to these voices that like just banged out, you know, really just took a room. Voices that just, no matter where you were, those voices just dominated everything. And I was really attracted to voices that did that. And I think Mike Waterson and Norma Waterson particularly had those kind of voices that just, they grabbed the attention, they dominated the room immediately. Yeah. And they didn't need to try, it was just their kind of voice, their character. And I was also attracted to kind of singers like Jeannie Robertson and the real characters of it, you know. There's a singer in Ireland, Rosie Stewart, who's another one, and Paddy Tunney and Peter Bellamy, these kind of voices that are really odd and really characteristic. There's something very unique, but something that's very dominating about them. And I was like, I think that had a huge impact on me with the influence of using my voice.
So you've got that voice, but actually the previous album that you made was a much more instrumental album, wasn't it? More about instrumental music that related to the landscape.
Yeah, I was out on tour with my friend Toby Hayes, a guitarist in Wales, and we were just booking gigs. Anyone who would give us a gig, we'd play, you know. And during that time, I was just going around all these areas with different landscapes, and it just filtered into me and inspired me to try to write stuff to do with those places.
Just coming through a wood now and past this lovely stream. It's a lovely setting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder how you set about conjuring up a landscape in an instrumental piece. It's something I associate with classical music. You can sometimes hear a piece of classical music that makes it sound like the sea or a moorland landscape or something. Mm-hmm. How do you do that when you're trying to convey the landscape through your playing?
Yeah, there's a lot in that. You know, I think in terms of musically sitting down and thinking in an open way, I just was fixated on harmonics with string instruments particularly. There was something that was very earthy, very open with that. And just arranging things modally more. So like modal scales was definitely lending its hand to more of an expansive sound. So that's kind of technically what I was having in mind. But then with those different landscapes, there was a song on the last album which was called Fortingall Yew, which was about an old tree in Scotland. And that one, there was a 12 string, and I was trying to think of neither a minor, neither a major scale, but somehow kind of sitting between them and sometimes leaning into either one of them, almost be something timeless, you know, in the sense of the age of something, the age of place, going through different time scales and timelines, and even the mundane places, even the things that weren't necessarily grandeur, almost making more of something, even if it was a simple melody. It was like the simplicity of maybe going on a walk, or the simplicity of seeing a place, but then holding that up as something that's quite big and almost orchestral. I was very interested in that as well. And like you've seen this area particularly, it's not, it isn't the Peak District, it isn't huge national park grandeur, but there's charm and there's things that if you pay attention, if you just be silent and still yourself, you can notice things, you know, like the birds above us now in the stream, and there's sounds, there's things which can be orchestral within the really finer details, than trying to somehow compose something that sounds big, because it is big. I think people mistake silence or like stillness as something that's not a lot going on, but often I find that it's the opposite. I think when you actually find that stillness, there's so much within that you can listen to.
Just listening now, actually, there's a lot going on around us, isn't there? As you say, the bird song and this little stream going past us. And the aeroplane.
Yeah, there's always an
there's
airplane.
Always an aeroplane.
You can't get away. But I like that as well.
Yeah.
Because I hate over romanticising about things. I don't like that.
Yeah.
Like when things like that happen, or someone makes a noise, or there's a siren. I enjoy that because that's what makes it even better. That's what makes you listening and understanding your environment better.
Contrast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And undercutting it a bit and saying, well, hang on a minute, you're only just down the road from Sheffield.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a housing estate just
exactly.
over there.
They're not lovely shepherds wandering about
no.
here, are they?
No, there's real people.
Yeah.
There's real community in the modern age, and I quite enjoy the blend.
Thank you.
that you were fooling. Oh, you ain't you fooling.
This fool's he holds, he is falling to with us inside, and we can't get over.
At this time of year, the lapwings, they come every like once every year around this time, and they lay their eggs. They're one of the only birds that lay eggs on the ground. And that field, there's normally this time of year loads. I haven't heard many on that field yet, but they sound like little aliens. They're really funny. I was once walking home from a pub not far from here on the other side with a friend, and we were absolutely smashed out of our heads. And we were walking past the field, and I was like, hear that? There's aliens. I was convinced they were aliens, you know. And
can you imitate the sound for us?
No. I don't think any human voice could. They're such a strange bird. They're really odd sounding, but they're amazing.
Yeah.
The reason why they call them lapwings is when they're in flight, they drop their wings, and you can see the wings just kind of lapping down, you know, because they go to their young. They constantly go to the ground.
It's a great area, this, to be thinking about roaming and walking, because there were some historic protests, weren't there, in this region, of people reclaiming the land.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about the Kinder Scout trespass in the 1930s.
Yeah, G.H.B. Ward was part of a group called Clarion Ramblers, who were based in Sheffield at the time. And him and a guy from Manchester, Benny Rothman, they were the kind of figureheads of the Kinder mass trespass over in the peaks in Edo. And the interesting thing, he didn't just do that, he was doing surrounding areas of Sheffield. And this is one of the areas that he did.
What, in terms of reclaiming land,
he was
for the public rights of way?
Yeah, he was involved with socialist groups in Sheffield who was in the industry at the time. And he set up this walking group for the weekend where people who worked in factories, who worked in some of the industrial jobs at the time, had a group to go out and walk, you know, surrounding areas of nature around the city. And in these old books that I've got, because they used to write little, tiny little pocket books, and they used to publish these, and they only did a few, but they've published them again. They've reprinted them, and I managed to get a hold of them. And they're amazing little things. Handwritten maps that they were mapping out for people to go on a route, and encouraging people to meet at certain pubs to go in mass. And he actually did one round here, and some of these paths that we're on now and around here, he mapped out in one of these maps, because it was owned land by a lot of the farmers and stuff.
So he was basically defying the landowners and saying,
yeah,
this is a right for the people to walk, you can't close us out.
Yeah, and some of those conversations was less aggressive, and some were probably more aggressive, and like the Kinder, the Peak District side of it was more aggressive.
And why did they decide to do that on Kinder Scout? What was it about Kinder Scout that made it the target?
I think because it was such a landmark for a lot of close by cities. So like Sheffield and Manchester particularly, it's right in the middle of it. And it's an amazing spot. And it's actually one of the only mountains, you know, that we've got on this area of the country. So it's a huge landmark for walkers, you know, and I think the dreariness of the week at work in these really hard industrial jobs, it was such a big thing, such a unique place as well, you know, to make sure that was public access.
I watched the video that you did for the Beneath the Willow, where you referenced a lot of the industrial past of Sheffield in particular and the history. Why did you want to bring that back? There's footage there from the Battle of Orgreave, for example, from the miners' strike. Why did you want to use those visual images with that song?
I had loads of ideas around trying to do a video like that for quite a while. And I think I'm very interested and intrigued about the idea of history being linear, and how things have knock-on effects for generations in front of them that you don't really realise going through political or social upheavals through time. And I was very interested with a song like Beneath the Willow that was wrote through my personal perspective and characters that I've been around throughout my life, which consequentially they were in a generation and in a time which has the effects of the past. You know, 80s, my mum's gone through that. They used to see picket lines and huge picket line protests. That was around, you know, my family's history and the effects of neoliberalism and what the end of community meant for these people. They knew what it was going to do. If you watch that Orgreave documentary, these are highly educated, you know, working class people who had socialist politics, and they knew the effects of what that meant in terms of local community. And I've seen those effects
playing out over many years
in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And my mum's seen those effects in her lifetime. And I'm very keen of trying to kind of link, trying to show a lineage of history and how things trigger into things in front of it and how that has an effect on generations after it. You know, we're living through another historic moment, and this is going to have repercussions.
And I wonder if you're ambivalent about the loss of the steel industry and the mining industry. I've got into trouble. Somebody complained the other day that I keep saying the Sheffield had lost its steel industry, when of course there is
it's still a steel industry now.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not on the scale that it was in the 1970s.
No.
Much diminished.
Yeah.
So the diminution of the steel industry, the mining industry, obviously had a huge impact on the communities involved.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
yeah,
the quality of life and the landscape,
yeah,
nature has come back,
yeah,
and things have to a certain extent improved.
Yeah. See, this is the thing, is, you know, these industries, such as the coal industry, we have to progress from the negative impacts of what that does on environment. And some of the, you know, some of the ex-miners were fully on board with that. And also, like, we can't romanticise what these jobs were. They're horrendous, you know. The industrial labour that, if you look back years and years before the 80s, there were kids from school just went in because that was their best way of earning money. That was their best steps for their life.
My granddad, you know, worked as in the rolling mills in Sheffield,
right,
and, you know, he died young.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't last beyond his 40s.
It's a really complicated thing, and we can't see it as a romanticised thing. My point has always been the way that it ended was a political attack on working class people and working class communities across the board, the way that it ended. And my problems with it was the wealth should have been redistributed to the people that have spent generations and generations who were exploited, you know, for their labour. The communities that they served, the money should have gone back into them. The wealth should have been redistributed in a way which it served those people. And the way that it ended with people being jailed for nothing, families jailed, without any kind of redirection in terms of job prospects, what they're going to go into. Because you're taking away all they know. That's what they've been born into, that's what they've served. There has to be an alternative, and there has to be a support mechanism that's in place. There wasn't any.
When I was young and in my prime, here could you, when I was human all the time. Now me hewin is a thoo. Now me hewin is a thoo. I had to face the dusted flea. I could you. Well, now the dust is killing me. Now me hewin is a thoo. Now me hewin is a thoo. I've laid down flat and shoveled coal. Hey, here, could you? Well, me eyes did smart in the dust field hole. Now me hewin is a thoo. Now me hewin is a thoo. brothers and the women. Here could you, will the women and sons of men. Now me wind is will soon that pit nae may well see. Here could you, but I'll carry it round inside of me. Now me wind is
well, that sounded pretty good to me.
Man.
Yeah, you're happy?
Quite surprised
yeah.
We got through that. Bit rough, but not played.
We're not sang that.
It's
going
to be rough.
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be.
I wanted to just finally ask you about the recording of the album, because that wasn't a very straightforward thing, was it? You didn't go into a studio in Sheffield and do it. Where did you go?
We went to probably the most remote, far out slog of a drive place that we could have imagined. It was an island off St. Louis called Bernera.
Off the coast of Scotland?
Off the coast of Scotland, yeah.
Why did you choose that place?
Because I'm mad. You know. No, it was a friend of mine, we were looking for a studio. I was like, I'm struggling, you know, I'm just, have you got any recommendations? And he said, Pete Fletcher's huge fan, he's got a studio out in Scotland. It's a hell of a drive, but he's your man. And we just clicked straight away.
What did you think, Neil, when he suggested it to you?
I wasn't that keen on it, because I knew I'd have to drive for... It was basically a day or two, wasn't it, driving?
Yeah, we stopped off in Glasgow.
We stopped off on the way in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And on the way back, I decided I could do it all in one go. So me and Dan blitzed it for hours on end.
I think you listened to every Black Sabbath album on the way back as well, didn't you? Was it?
We tried to listen to really long songs to try and make the journey seem shorter, and it really worked. So, like, no songs under 20 minutes long. You know, some Yes and a bit of funkadelic. And
so 70s prog rock
came
into its own there.
A lot of that,
So what was the place like where you stayed up there?
The studio was an old fishing factory, and so it was on the harbour looking on the Atlantic. It's silent up there. It's just completely silent. It completely gave us a single focus. There was no interference. There was just, we got up, we ate breakfast, we had coffee, maybe had a walk outside, and then just cracked on. It was just magic, you know, terrific.
Yeah, well worth the drive.
I remember Neil ringing me on the way back and was like, we're never doing that again. And then, like, last year, I was like, I think... we try to record the next one, and like, what do you think about going up there? Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, bit of time gave me some perspective.
Well, listen, guys, it's been fantastic to walk with you and talk with you today. Thank you very much indeed for sharing your songs and for sharing your stories with us.
Thanks for making the effort to come on, and lovely meeting you. Yeah, it's really nice to see you in physical form.
Rather than down the Zoom.
Thanks for supporting the album, and it means a lot, you know. I know everyone says it, but it does mean a lot when someone thinks of it and puts it up.
It's fantastic.
Platform, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well,
thanks for that.
We're delighted to do that. Jim Geddy in Sheffield and the Moss Valley. Well, I have to tell you that we have filmed the songs that Jim has performed for us during our walk today, and we're going to add them to Folk on Foot on Film, which is our amazing archive of video footage that we've shot during all our walks. We've got more than 100 song films in the archive, plus all the sets from the 4 Folk on Foot festivals. And you can get access to all of that if you sign up to become a patron of Folk on Foot at folkonfoot.com/watch. Just go to folkonfoot.com/watch, sign up, and you'll get access to that ever-growing archive, which is an amazing snapshot of UK contemporary folk music. We know you'll love it. And even if you don't sign up, there are over 60 episodes now of Folk on Foot for you to explore. So please delve around into our back catalogue and have fun.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.